I can remember talking to her at the table one day, and I don't know if she had mentioned it beforehand, but I asked her the question that I was sort of dreading the answer. I asked her, could she ever come home? And she said no. She said that some of the orders have a house that parents can come to stay in with the nuns, but she didn't say at the time that Cork didn't have such a place for parents to stay, you know. I think she was just breaking it gently to us, you know.
Áine O'Reilly was 21 and a law graduate when she entered the Poor Clares, an enclosed order. She has made the decision to devote her life to prayer. She will never go home again. You will hear the voices of Áine, who is now called Sister Colette Marie, novice mistress Sister Miriam, Áine's parents Mary and Paddy O'Reilly, her sister Breed and her brother Eamon.
Well, I suppose I always thought that I might become a nun, and when I was in school, it was always a possibility. So when I did my leaving cert, I thought of it, but at that time I didn't feel ready. So I went to university and did law here at UCC for 3 years, and I think it was in my final year that one week a friend of mine said to me, did I ever think of becoming a nun? And about the same time, my brother wrote to me, he's a seminarian, and suggested that he thought I had a vocation. So these two things coming together seemed to be the Lord telling me something. So I used to pass by this monastery on my way to college, and it occurred to me, like, you know, what's going on behind the wall, like, and was there a possibility that I might be behind there someday? Like, so it was after I graduated that I went and spoke to a priest, and he said, well, you'd better find out something about the contemplative life if you feel attracted to it. So I first came here then in about June 88 after getting my degree, and it was about a year and a half later that I actually entered.
When you realised that perhaps you might have a vocation, what was your reaction?
Well, I suppose it was mixed. The fact that I was thinking of entering an enclosed order did make a difference. If I had been thinking of entering an active order, it wouldn't have been quite so hard, I suppose. My family reacted, as you can imagine. Some of them found it hard. I remember my dad saying to me, you know, it's great that you're entering, like, and then he said, but does that mean you won't be coming home anymore? You know, it is the enclosure part of it, I think, is the part that hits people most, like. But at the same time, I felt that it was what God wanted for me, and that I suppose really, like, I felt at peace about it from that point of view.
We still share everything with her, you know, as a family. Like, it's, like, I'd say she's probably more in touch a lot of the time with what's going on than, like, so I am, like, up here in Dublin, because the letters to and fro, like, to her and from her are very frequent, and they're very, very funny, like, in real life. It's not staged at all, like, and it's not, she's still very natural, like, you know. It's, so everything, I would say, every circumstance, especially at home, like, or anything Mam would say, be worried about or get excited about, or any incidents, Áine would know them. Like, you know, it's, the flow is still there. So she shares everything. She's still very much family, like. So the occasion itself she'll miss, and we'll miss her at the occasions. But I still think she can, you know, it's funny, but I suppose her presence will still be there, and, you know.
What do people say to you when they discover that your sister is a nun in an enclosed order, a young girl in her early 20s, a law graduate? How do people react?
People who've known her actually would say, some would say I saw that she was very saintly or very holy or very gentle or that, that or else they would say, oh, she's really good person, and that's a total waste of a life in there. Like she could have done some fantastic work, say with people, with socially deprived people or something like that. People who haven't known her would obviously say the same thing, as in, you know, that's a waste of a good person's life. But the general reaction, I suppose, overall is one of, it's that, does that thing still go on, you know? And most people are a bit naive in saying that, and then they'd follow that by saying they won't allow her out at all. And it's not a case, I always say to them, it's not a case of they won't allow her out, she doesn't actually want to come out. You know, she wants, that's, she's committed herself to that. So I think when people react to me telling them that my sister's in an enclosed order, we only see her 3 times a year, the general reaction from young people, I suppose my own age, would be that this thing still doesn't go, this thing still goes on, and she's not allowed out. Like,
do you think it's a waste of a life?
No, I think if it's, well, she's happy, and I would believe in the power of prayer, even though I probably wouldn't practice it as much as I should, or obviously not as much as she does. So some good, I'd say, comes out of it. Some good definitely comes out of it.
We get up at 4:15, and then we go down to what we call choir, which is our in enclosed chapel, which is opposite the public chapel. And there we have, we say some prayers, and then we have some spiritual reading for about 1/4 hour, and then we have morning meditation. We have 2 periods of meditation during the day, which is, I suppose, mental prayer, silent personal prayer. And then after that, at about 7:00, we have the Divine Office, morning prayer of the Divine Office, the breviary. And then at 7:30, we have a Holy Mass. We have 2 Masses each day, and the first is at 7:30. And after that, we have breakfast, which is very welcome then. And then we go to our different duties before our 10 o'clock Mass. And we have another office afterwards, and then we go back to our different duties. And we have spiritual reading then for 1/2 hour before saying another little office, and then dinner. And every day then we have 1/2 hour of recreation, which means that the whole community come together in a kind of family atmosphere. Because normally during the day we have a rule of silence. It's not very strict in the sense that it doesn't mean we can't talk to each other at all, but it means that we're limited in a sense that there are certain areas where we don't talk. And so this period of recreation then is a time for chatting and family news and things like that. For the rest of the day then, usually, you know, we'd go gardening maybe in the afternoon for as much time as we can. And we also have what we call a study hour for 1 hour in the afternoon. And that's time for reading and for maybe printing. We do some printing, calligraphy, those kind of things. So it's a kind of 1 hour when maybe to use to develop our talents in those areas, and maybe learning some music or those kind of things, and also for reading the Lives of Saints and the Roman Observer and all kinds of educational subjects. And at 5:00 we have evening prayer from the Divine Office, and then after that we have benediction at 5:30 each evening, and after that we have evening meditation, and then supper. And then we say the rosary, we say the crown of Our Lady, the 7 joys. We don't say the 5 mysteries, you know what I mean? We say the 7 joys of Our Lady. It's a Franciscan tradition. And after that we have night prayer, and then we retire.
She was a very happy child. You couldn't... We didn't have to chastise her much. We didn't have to slap her much. But you wouldn't really have got around to slapping her because she'd be so sorry and she'd be crying before, if she did anything wrong, before you'd say anything to her, that I don't think she was ever slapped.
When she was growing up, and she was obviously smart in school, you know, did you have any inclination at that stage that she'd, you know, what route she'd take?
Yes, I think, well, at least in her teens, yes, I always felt it. I think most people did, actually, who knew her, felt it was a possibility. But we didn't. I didn't, anyway. I think of the poor Clares. Then sometimes a lot of people said it to us all along for a little, from the time she was 16, 17, I suppose, you know, that Anya will be a nun. And from my experience, I often felt, maybe she won't. It's often the girls that you expect to be nuns who don't become nuns. You know, the tomboyish girls now often makes a very good nun. Well, Anya was pretty average, like, but she wasn't anywhere wild or tomboyish, you know. She was good at sports and that, but she was... I just felt maybe she mightn't. You know, but the possibility was always there, I think.
She chose then to do a law degree. Did that surprise you?
I think she didn't know what to do. I don't think law really suited her. I remember asking her, even when she had registered, could she change to something like social science? Because law was supposed to be very dry, and you felt that Anya had a sort of sense of vocation anyway, that she wouldn't be able to fulfil with a law degree. So I think she did well in it, considering that she wasn't... I don't think she was ever going to continue in law. She'd have done something else if she hadn't entered.
She was a member of the local athletic club, and she was pretty good at athletics. She took part in racing, and they had a basketball team here in the secondary school, and I think they won the Munster title. She had made lots of friends, and there were several of her classmates would be calling to the house to see her and that, you know. So,
did you know anything about, we'll say, the poor Clares before Anya decided to enter?
No, I didn't. I didn't even know how many houses they had in Ireland. I know they had some, but I didn't know how many houses they had in Ireland. So, you could say I knew very little about them, you know.
For me, it was a desire to spend my life doing God's work, kind of, that I wasn't even interested in teaching or nursing, but I suppose the reality of God and the fact that this life, no matter how long it might be, is short, and that eternity is going to be pretty long, like, and that that's really the most important thing. And I suppose I was touched maybe by things like Our Lady's message at Fatima, when, you know, she talks about, you know, the fact that hell does exist, like, and we can help to save souls, and that's, like, I firmly believe that it's a reality, and it is, to me, it's one of the most important things. I mean, as I say, like, eternity will be pretty long, and to think that somebody mightn't be saved, like, is the worst thing that could really happen. And so that I felt that I wanted to devote my life not just to maybe, you know, having God's business, we'll say, as a sideline or something that I could do in my spare time, like, but to make it my life's work. And also, I suppose, I think Jesus has always been my best friend in a way. I mean, we always have good friends, like, but I do feel that Jesus has been my best friend, and so that in a way it's natural to want to spend my life with him.
She was definitely Daddy's pet. As a baby, we'll say. later on, we'll say growing up, you know, when she was kind of maybe 15 or 16 and up to even now, she hasn't changed personality that much. Always very gentle, unassuming. Never that bothered, you know, about material things. And, you know, she was the kind, like, if she got a new, something new to wear, like, where I would be dying to have the new thing, like, you know, it wouldn't bother her, like, if she didn't have something new to wear. She was always maybe happier than the rest of us to be at home, not doing a whole lot with Mammy and Daddy, kind of, when the rest of us would be, you know, much more interested in skiting off. When she went to do her degree in law then in UCC, we never knew much about it. Like, she never talked much about it, or, and I never, ever really pictured her practising law.
Did you ever think at any stage when she was growing up that perhaps she would become a nun?
Like, when we discovered it, or when she said it, which she didn't talk about it at all, like, it was a surprise, and yet it wasn't a surprise, like, because, you know, because of her personality, in that sense it wasn't a surprise. You could have seen why she would have made the decision, but she definitely made it in a quiet manner. And no, it wasn't a surprise in that sense, but it still was a surprise in that she hadn't talked about it. But she was always more, you know, quite religious, like, and from that point of view, it wasn't a surprise.
What was your first reaction when she told you?
Oh, yuck. Like, no, I didn't like her entering at all. I suppose, like, what you see as your own future, maybe. You know, you kind of, you can't picture why somebody else would pick a completely different career or choice to you. And I think she would have made a lovely mother, you know. And I suppose because I am a mother and I have small children, like, you know, I don't like her to see her denied that privilege, maybe, you know. No, it took me a long while to come to terms with it, and I didn't even like talking about it very much. And it upset my mother an awful lot, you know. But at the same time, like, it was her decision.
When Sister Colette Marie, now she was Anya then, she, her first day to arrive at the monastery, I happened to be the novice mistress for a few years before that, so it was my privilege and my duty to welcome her and to take over directing her from the time she came in, guiding her and instructing her into our way of life. And I happened to be there at the actual moment when she was parting with her family, so that, if you like, I had to be a bridge.
What was that like?
Oh, it's always an occasion when you get a lump in your throat and you just have to hope for the best that, you know, that that you'll be able to support her through the tears.
Do many young people come in?
Well, comparatively speaking with the other religious orders, we've had a constant, you know, flow of people coming. But as the nuns say, they comes and they goes, but mostly they goes. But it's in that sense, like, we have had people coming steadily over the years, you know, young people. And some stay, some make it, some stay for a short whilst, some a little longer. But I would see each person's coming to us as a providential touch of God, and there's a mystery in why a person would be called to come and then find that, well, no, this isn't where God wants me. I think there's a great mystery in that for all of us.
The Grail is almost the first thing people see. It means that, for example, I couldn't hug somebody, but I can shake hands fine. But the life itself is balanced, and it's peaceful, and it's healthy in the sense that while we have quite a lot of time for prayer compared with, we'll say, ordinary people, in inverted commas, at the same time, we have quite a big garden, and we've plenty of time for manual work. And I suppose that's a kind of a good, healthy thing that we need, like we need with the work. And really, I'd say it's a healthy kind of a lifestyle, and it's natural.
Do you ever think of, we'll say, the outside life? Because you're in the convent now 3 years. Have you ever been outside since you entered?
Twice. Once for medical reasons and once for to vote. Just twice, really. I was out, you know, for like a matter of an hour or two each time. Not even an hour or two, just out the road and back in.
What was that like?
Well, it was kind of interesting. In a sense, it was funny because when we went to vote, the sisters in the car with me were saying, gosh, the buses are square. They used to be round. They used to be green and they're all colours. So I think if anybody had been listening to us, it would have really sounded like we were out of the ark. But, well, it's nice, you know, it is nice now and again to get out. Just to see a different scene. But thank God in this monastery, you know, we do have a nice view out our windows. And we have nice trees in our garden. And that, I think that's a help, really, you know, to be able to see, you know, scenery is always kind of a nice thing, you know.
There are things that she's denied herself. I wouldn't like to deny myself. You know, I mean, the chance to get married, to have a family, to see your own children growing up, then all the simple pleasures that you miss, like, I mean, you know, kind of reading a magazine or looking at television or going for a walk, other than in the particular grounds, we'll say, I mean, she can never go to the sea again. Sure, she can't. I mean, I never thought of that. Like, you know, she can't. You know, she can't go for coffee with a friend. Like, or, you know, she gives up all those maybe simple things that we really love. Well, that I love particularly, you know. I mean, she obviously, you know, the things maybe are more important to her. But all the time I do feel it was her own choice. You know, I always say, like, she's not stupid. You know, she's an educated girl. Not even that she's an educated girl. She's a sensible girl. Maybe more than she's an educated girl. She's a sensible girl. Like, it was completely her choice to go in. And, you know, I mean, she can come out. That's the great thing. And we were laughing the last visit that we were down. And, like, maybe there's, you know, two or three of us married in the family. We were kind of saying, you know, if anything happens, like, we can't really walk away as easily as she can. If she decided in the morning, like, she can leave, no matter what vows she's taken.
What's the most difficult thing, do you think, about her entering an order like the Poor Clares?
From her point of view, that she would like to have a family or that she would like to have children.
Would she?
I don't know. I never asked her. I wouldn't like to ask her because I think it might upset her. I don't know. I never asked her that. From my point of view, the fact that it upsets my mother so much, you know, like, you know, through the day of her profession now. Like, Mammy cried, like, I'd say, until it was time to bring up the gifts. And then because she had to bring up the gifts, she kind of had to get her act together, like. Yeah, I think it's definitely upsetting on my mother. It's hard on her from that point of view, yeah. I suppose, oh, that she'll never be able to come down and visit us or, you know, each Christmas, like, that. She definitely won't be there, whatever about anybody else. She definitely won't be there. You can kind of count her out.
The grill itself is about, say, roughly 4 feet square, and it's about, the bottom of it is about 2.5 to 3 feet from the ground. So there's a big area, really, and we'll say, little hole in it is about maybe 3-4 inches square. Do you know?
Do you think it's a huge barrier between you now?
I don't, in fact. I don't. No, the fact that she could come out there and talk to us for maybe 2 or 3 hours, all the family, and as I say, you get used to the grill and so on, so I don't think it's a barrier, no. If it's one of their rules, so be it, you know.
Would you have chosen this way of life for her?
I doubt if I would, you know, but once she's happy, that's the principal thing, you know.
Do you ever think that she's denying herself certain pleasures in life or not fulfilling maybe certain talents that she has?
I wouldn't. I would be very happy that I would feel that she's happier than most girls of her age. Come to where she is, and I suppose the danger in the outside world now is that a lot of her age group are, in my mind, exploited to an extent, you know. So that I'm not saying that maybe I would like it to be in a very sheltered life just for that reason, but still I think she's as happy as any girl can be, you know.
Do you ever feel, you're here 17 years now, do you ever feel you've missed out on things, we'll say like family, children, or did you ever want that in the first instance?
Well, I had never really wanted a family as such. I did want to get married, if you can add that one up. I don't think it's very theologically correct. But I did, yes, I loved fellows. And I loved the variety of men. But it's funny that I did lines, I did many lines, and I had many relationships with people. But I found that I could never share this deepest part of myself with anybody. I did have a very good friend, a girlfriend in college, and I found that the fellows that I went out with, I got on terrifically well with them. But I could never share this very deepest part of me. And I thought it was that I couldn't get any fellow with a good faith, you know, a good religious faith. But in actual fact, it was God's way of saying, look, I want to be the focus of your love. And I want you to share all your love with me. I didn't realise that when I was searching and wanting, as I thought, to get married. But it was that I was searching for this, to love and to be loved by one person. And it happened to be God. And when I realised that, it was great, but until I realised it, it was rather confusing.
Do you ever discuss with the young nuns who come in, do you ever discuss their fears, their worries, that perhaps they've made or haven't made the right decision?
Yes, that would be my primary role, if you like, as novice mistress, within the 6 years of the formation period, to discern together that the postulant or the candidate, that we would discern together. It's a two-way decision. If I feel that it's very obvious that a person hasn't a vocation, well, I have to, with the help of God and with the help of the formation team, I have to try and help them to see that themselves, so that I can't come along and say, look, you haven't a vocation, forget it, get out. I have to help them to come through the journey of seeing it themselves. And well and good if they do find it themselves. But if they don't, if they can't come to the decision, they've got to be helped to realise it, you know. And it does take a full 6 years, really, to, you know, by the time the spiritual and psychological and emotional growing pains have been worked through, it does take a lot of maturity to say, yes, I think I can be almost sure this is where God wants me. And the little percentage of me that's not sure, well, I trust to God to look after that little percentage as well.
Well, we do hear a news bulletin, and some of the sisters read the paper, so that we do hear what's necessary. Of course, we wouldn't be au fait with everything that's going on. Like, we get surprises, you know, now and again, things come out and we're not up to the latest. But I suppose we're in touch with what matters, you know, and a lot of the sisters would have contact with the public. I mean, we do exercise a kind of an apostolate, in the sense that a lot of people come to talk to one or two of the sisters, and also they write asking for prayers, and there are so many problems in the world, and they do come to us, and from that point of view, we would be in touch with that and with what matters, and we do try to be in touch too with what's happening in the church. We try to be aware of that, and we get lots of religious publications, so that, and well, we try to be in touch, as I say, with what matters.
Do you ever feel the world is passing you by?
well, I suppose in a way the world seems to be running so fast, like in that sense it could be passing me by. But I think, you know, I think in a sense it's good, what we're doing is good in the sense that we're kind of almost stepping off the world and letting it run along. But I think we can, in a sense, maybe see things better to be able to step out from the rush, because so much of life is a rush. And I suppose nowadays especially, things, you know, that's the way life is like, especially I suppose in, we're in the Western world and it's like that. But in a sense, I suppose, our life is, it's a peaceful and quiet most of the time. And in that sense, I suppose we can kind of see what's really happening in the world. Like maybe the Lord gives us kind of an insight, at least we try to be able to see what's really happening, and that the invisible world is often, is really the more important and more real, and that if we're rushing too much, that we don't see that, the invisible, the things of the spirit, I'll say, you know.
Will you ever go out again?
Well, we do go to the dentist. We go to hospital if we need to, or we go to vote if there's, you know, if it's a moral or religious issue at stake, like the time the referendum on abortion and the referendum on divorce.
When you go out, do people look at you strangely?
Oh, when we go out to the dentist or to vote, yeah. I mean, the local people would kind of have a feeling that, God, they're the poor Clares. You know, they never go out. And they do, they definitely look at us strangely, but I'd say maybe not as strangely as we look at them.
Does anything surprise you when you go outside?
Oh, the cars. Yeah, the speed of cars and the whole one-way traffic business. That's, yeah, that's really changed. You know, if I see a car coming now and I'm inside and, you know, a passenger, I almost duck because I think they're going to come through the window screen. And I had a motorbike so that I shouldn't really find it that, you know, that different. But it's just not being out on the road for so long that suddenly when you're out, you think the whole thing is going to disintegrate.
When you get that taste of freedom, do you ever wish you could stay outside?
No, I think it's because that the perspective has got into the blood, and I just feel that I'm rooted like in the one thing that matters, you know, and I bring all the people back in with me.
Your normal day, how much silence would be involved in that?
Well, St. Clare says in her rule, let the sisters keep silence from the hour of Compline, that's from the night office until the following morning. That's called the great silence. It's in the monastic tradition everywhere. And she says they shall also keep silence in the choir, that's our chapel, in the refectory while eating, and in the dormitories. And we're expected to keep silence within reason for the most of the day, but she has a beautiful little sentence. She says, however, the sisters may say whatever is necessary, briefly and in a low voice, always, so that it's not a rigid silence. It's a helpful silence to the prayer life.
You studied music in UCC. Do you still play a lot of music?
We play music for the liturgy, for the Divine Office, which we chant six times a day and once at midnight. And there are hymns in the Divine Office which we always sing. And we would sing the canticles, like the Magnificat canticle. And that happens maybe twice a day, morning and evening especially. And then we would sing the other hymns. And then we have singing for the Mass, depending on the occasion. You know, it's called progressive solemnity. If it's a big feast day, well, we'll sing most of the Mass with the appropriate hymns. And if it's just an ordinary day, well, we'll just highlight the three parts that are always sung, the Gospel Alleluia, the acclamation after the consecration, and the Great Amen. And that determines the kind of music that I play now.
3 times a year, and of course the grill is always there between us, like, so that in that sense I'm conscious of not being with them in the full sense, you know what I mean, of being at home with them, like the fact that the grill is there, like. But at the same time, as I say, it is a little bit hard, like, but then the Lord gives the grace, and actually having a visit, in a way, it brings it all back. And while instead of having the visit and having a family making things much easier and being great, it can actually bring all the sadness back, like, because the actual moment of leaving can be almost heartbreaking, in the sense that, like, I had come to the decision myself, but my family just had to accept it. They hadn't come to it. They hadn't chosen it. So that for them, it was a matter of trying to accept something they maybe couldn't understand very well. So that when one enters, one has that feeling of almost breaking somebody else's heart. So that the heart, you know, that pain is there, like. And but again, I wouldn't like to give the impression that everything is really hard, because it's not. And even, I think even my family, you know, as they say, once they see that I'm happy, they're happy, like.
As a mother, what is it like to know that she won't come home again?
Tough, yeah. Mm. But she's happy.
Does that make it any easier?
Yes, it does.